We welcome in Sarah Pratt. She's the public access counselor for the Attorney General's office, who deals with FOIA on a regular basis. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's first talk about your role as public access counselor. What exactly do you do there for the Attorney General's office?
Well, the public access counselor, the primary duty of me and the attorneys and staff that work with me in the Public Access Bureau is to provide advice and education with respect to the interpretation and implementation of FOIA and the Open Meetings Act as well. Actually, Attorney General Madigan had a public access counselor for several years before the major changes to FOIA and OMA in 2010. But in 2010, the public access counselor became a statutory position. And with that, we have duties and powers, including free training and education. We can issue advisory opinions. We answer informal inquiries. And, of course, we established the electronic FOIA and OMA training for FOIA officers and OMA designees. But our main work is in the form of requests for review, and that's where we have the authority to review denials of public records by public bodies.
So, for instance, if someone submits a FOIA request, a governmental body, for whatever reason, denies that request, people can then come to you to review that process.
Yes. Our process, it's really an alternative to litigation. People are always free to, again, go through Section 11 and sue in court. But, you know, we found that both public bodies and the public have had difficulty in interpreting the act. So we're here to try to help people gain access to, you know, our best outcome is if we can work things out between the public body and the requester so that they gain access to records. We do also have authority to issue binding opinions, which then can be reviewed in circuit court.
About how many people would you say your office assists each year with FOIA requests?
Thousands. Since I began in the Public Access Bureau in 2011, the number of requests for review that we get has increased every year. For example, last year we got over 4,000 requests for review in our office, and of that, the vast majority of those are FOIA as opposed to OMA. I think we received something like 3,700 requests for review. Every year, our average number of requests for review per month have gone up. Last year, we were averaging approximately 325 requests per review each month. This year, so far, in 2015, we're averaging about 385 new requests for assistance with FOIA denials per month. There's no shortage of work.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics in the Freedom of Information laws here in the state of Illinois. Who exactly is subject to those FOIA laws?
Public bodies are subject to the FOIA laws. And so, you know, public bodies are, of course, you know, school districts, the state of Illinois, cities, villages, towns, the General Assembly, you know, basically all legislative, executive, administrative, or advisory bodies of the state.
And I assume that that then does also extend to, for instance, public universities as well?
Absolutely. State universities and colleges are included.
And then what types of documents and communications are specifically subject to the FOIA laws?
Well, again, public records are subject to FOIA, and public records are defined within the Act as all records, and that includes, you know, reports, memoranda, books, photos, microfilm, tapes, any kind of medium that pertain to the transaction of public business.
There's been some controversy recently about personal email accounts used by public officials to conduct state business.
Yes.
What is your understanding as to those accounts are subject to FOIA laws?
Again, this is kind of an area where the law really hasn't quite kept up with changes in technology, but it's the position of our office that if you transact public business, even if it's on a personal device such as a cell phone or tablet or personal computer, that it really depends on the content of the communication, and that even if it's on a personal device, if you're a public employee, that would still be a public record.
And I'm curious, has there been much case law at all established yet on this particular topic?
You know, there really isn't a lot of case law on this yet. Probably the main case that's out there that's helpful on this subject is City of Champaign versus Madigan. And that stemmed from the appeal of one of our binding opinions that found that emails that were sent between members of a city council were considered public records. And the appellate court upheld our decision, but there still is a gray area in that. That had dealt with particular circumstances, of course, as each case does. And in that instance, the court found that because the members of the public body were, there was no question but what they were sending emails back and forth during the course of a meeting. The question, of course, arises when you take that context outside of a meeting and whether or not there's some argument that when individuals are, you know, out on their own, you know, acting, using their phone for public business, you know, whether or not those can be considered records of a public body. We would draw a distinction between elected officials who are simply members of a city council who are acting as part of a body during a meeting and state employees who they're doing their job all the time. So we would argue that there is a difference that it would extend to communications by public employees, even if they weren't at their office or something. But again, this is an area where there's not a lot of case law yet.
So I would imagine that this will be a bit up in the air until it gets appealed to some kind of a higher court, Supreme Court, et cetera.
Oh, this particular case?
Well, just the issue of personal email accounts in general.
Yes, I think that certainly that, again, I think our position on it is pretty clear, but we haven't really done a binding opinion on, you know, personal emails outside the context of a meeting yet. But yes, I think it's fair to say that we will likely see more about this from courts at some point.
What are some of the common exemptions to FOIA laws? What types of documents, emails, et cetera, would not be something that could be released to the public?
Well, there are actually 38 exemptions to FOIA.
Oh, my.
Just a little cocktail party fact there. But the most common exemptions are probably the personal privacy exemptions and then Section 71F. Section 71B exempts from disclosure private information, and that's a pretty easy one. That generally means unique identifiers like your social security number, driver's license number, you know, personal email addresses, that sort of thing. And a lot of redactions are done pursuant to that, and that's not very controversial in general. Section 71C is an exemption that is a little more tricky to apply, and that exempts from disclosure personal information. And personal information is, again, it's kind of subject to a balancing test. So it's information, the disclosure of which would be a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. That section also says the disclosure of information that bears on the public duties of public employees and officials shall not be considered an invasion of personal privacy. So again, personal privacy involves a balancing test of how much of an invasion of a person's privacy it is versus the public interest in getting the information. And of course, any personal emails that don't have to do with public business, even if they're on a publicly owned computer, messages that don't have to do or texts or emails that don't have to do anything with public business are, of course, not public records, so would not be subject to FOIA. I'd say one other exemption that is commonly used for withholding things such as email messages and text messages is Section 71F. That provides an exemption for preliminary drafts, notes, recommendations, memoranda, and records in which opinions are expressed or policies or actions are formulated.
Okay, that sounds like an interesting one to me, where there could be definitely some gray area for that particular exemption.
Yes, that is definitely an exemption where there's a lot of gray area, and it is subject to interpretation. You know, the idea behind it is that public bodies are allowed and encouraged to have free exchange of information and ideas where they're in the process of figuring out what they're going to do, how they're going to address problems, and that sort of thing.
Sarah, any other aspects of the Freedom of Information Act that you think are particularly important that we should share today?
It is important to recognize that all public records are presumed to be open to inspection and copying. So pretty much everything that a public body has is probably going to be a public record. And there's a presumption that everything there, anybody in the public has a right to inspect and copy that information unless there is an exemption that applies. And if a public body wants to withhold something pursuant to some exemption, the public body has the burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that that exemption should apply to those records.
Sarah Pratt, Public Access Counselor with the State Attorney General's Office. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.